Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 381 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Elizabeth S. This episode, we have a special treat. We will be sharing our interview with the owner of Braden Press, Emily McEwen, and we will talk about how she came up with the idea to begin her publishing house, and especially a recent publication, Ian of New Scotland, that has a foreword written by Diana Gabaldone. We'd like to welcome Emily McEwen here on the Outlander podcast. As we say, our show is about Outlander and anything and everything tangential to Outlander, which of course Scotland is, and of course the Gaelic languages. So we are here to talk about all of that with Emily McEwen. Welcome!
Great to be here.
Tell us about yourself and your background and how you came to found Braden Press.
Right. Well, it's been a long path. Back in the late 80s, I was listening to, there's a syndicated Celtic music show on NPR called Thistle and Shamrock, and I think it's still running, with the host Fiona Ritchie. And she played one day a song by Cathy Amnesty in Gaelic. It's called Stufanaitia, Wet is the Night. And it's a walking song or a milling song. And then she, you know, said it was Scottish Gaelic. And I just said to myself, what is that? That is the most beautiful thing I've ever heard. It's the most beautiful language I've ever heard. I have to learn this. Oh my gosh, what am I going to do? And then happened to find a professor at my university, which was actually University of Illinois, at Urbana-Champaign in the Midwest and in the States, where I am not anymore. But there was a biology professor there who was from the Isle of Lewis, and he was a native Gaelic speaker. And it turned out he had a little group of students and professors and townies and everybody who would just come along once a week. And we used to use the little blue book, Teach Yourself Gaelic, by Roderick MacKinnon. So that was my start. And then I went to University of Aberdeen for a year through my university's exchange program. So that's where I started. And then I just kind of kept going on that path. And I never, you know, I went off path a few times and kept finding my way back onto the path. Ended up doing a PhD in linguistic anthropology and studied Scottish Gaelic language revitalization and shift. So, you know, that's the whole academic side of it. I used to teach courses on that. And then I ended up moving to Nova Scotia. I met this guy, this man. I met a man. Well, I had been in Scotland for a research trip, and then I, on my way back to Pittsburgh, where I was a professor at the time, I went to a Gaelic studies conference at St. Francis Xavier University in Antigonish in Nova Scotia. And that was actually my first time in Nova Scotia. And then I met this guy, as you do. Anyway, long story short, we met at the Salt Codfish Supper at the Highland Village Museum, at the end of a long bus, with conferences, we'll have field trips just like you used to have in school, like, because we're all just children at heart, basically. And so we had this conference field trip to this Highland Village Folk Museum, where they have buildings, they have, you know, historical buildings like a taitu, a black house, an old Hebridean thatched house, and then they have like a log cabin from like when the pioneers came to Nova Scotia and then all these other historical buildings relocated from all around Cape Breton Island. And anyway, so I met this guy and bang, zoom, the rest is history. Eventually moved here. We got married. We had a Gaelic wedding. We had an all Gaelic wedding at the Highland Village Museum, actually. They're at the top of the hill at the museum. There's a decommissioned church building, which they actually had moved on a barge across the Bredour Lakes from its original site in Malagawatch.
And goodness.
So we had our wedding ceremony there, and great, fantastic. And then I came here, but Nova Scotia's economy is not like the greatest, and so you know, people, when you move here, it's not, you can't always step right into a job, and so particularly if you have very particular kinds of qualifications, and unfortunately if they're not things that are really sexy like computer programming, then you know, you, it's hard to get like okay, thanks, don't call us, we'll call you. So a few years went by and had close, you know, I was able to teach a couple of courses at one university, and then I taught another course on Celtic Christianity at Atlantic School of Theology here, but nothing full-time was emerging at all. And so finally I was talking to my mother and she said, you know, you really got to write that book. And I started a blog somewhere along the way, which is gaelic.co.co. I wrote a post about Gaelic tattoos, or bad Gaelic tattoos. I saw this BuzzFeed post about bad Chinese tattoos. And I thought, oh my gosh, I wonder, it was so funny. And I had studied Japanese in the past and had studied kanji a little bit too. So it just seemed even funnier. Oh, this guy got, you know, fried rice with pork fat tattooed on his arm. And,
oh,
you know,
gosh.
And I thought, well, I mean, it's funny if he meant to, but like if he thought he was getting like, I love you or something then, or, you know, live, laugh, love, then that wouldn't be so funny. So I said, I wonder if they have, if some people have done that for Gaelic. And I started Googling and like, yes, indeed, there are some bad Gaelic tattoos out there. And so I wrote this blog post and it went viral, great, because Gaelic things hardly ever go viral, which is why that Outlander connection is actually pretty exciting, because that's probably the most mainstream culture exposure the Scottish Gaelic has had, like, ever. So at any rate, I wrote the blog post. It did really well. And then I kept saying, I should write a book and add a glossary of, like, these are the things you should get tattooed if you want to, or that you could use them for jewelry or crafts, or, you know, making, you can make greeting cards or rubber stamps or anything, that you could use them for those too. And I finally went and did that. And then it was like, well, I got a choice. I can either shop this around to the traditional publishers, or I can publish it myself. And so I looked into self-publishing and realized, like, oh, actually, I've done this before and it doesn't seem too hard. It seems like it's actually using all of the skills that I have, and it's all of the things that I love to do and have done before. I actually used to publish science fiction zines when I was in high school and college for a very obscure British TV show called Blake Seven. I'm going to give a go with this publishing thing. I ended up in an entrepreneurship class, an immigrant women entrepreneurs class. And the organization had tried to help me with like my resume and getting a job, but I have really specialized skills and it didn't go very well. And they could only think, the only thing they could think of to suggest me was English teaching, but they wanted me to go back to school and get another certificate for that. And I said, I've already got a PhD. Like, what do you want me to do? Like, I used to help graduate students write their papers. So like, what? And I also did teach English in Japan somewhere in there. And so I just said, oh, I don't think I want to go into debt for another job that I might or might not get. So I'll just go into debt for this instead. Robbed a little bit out of my retirement savings. And published a book, and then very rapidly just kept on publishing more books. And because when I went through the entrepreneurship course, it helped us, you know, set up our company, write our mission statement, business plan, business cards, all, you know, all the kinds of things you have to do, register your business and income tax and sales tax rather, and all that stuff. And so the unfun side of Gaelic publishing. And it helped us with networking and everything. So, you know, really, you get the ball rolling and you think, okay, I'm just going to make a really good go of this and see how it goes. And it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and keep publishing more books. And I feel perpetually behind. There's like 8 different authors or, you know, prospective authors that I need to review their manuscripts, write up the decisions and send them to them and decide, you know, does this need editing? Are we going to accept it or not? And all this kind of stuff. So I'm behind, 9 months behind with bookkeeping and everything. But that's how I got there in a nutshell, I guess.
You mentioned the bookkeeping and you were just, you know, using some time to work on bookkeeping. And you said it just never goes away, right? It's always there.
Endless.
The fact that you have nine manuscripts or 9 authors or 9 works waiting on you, that's a great problem to have.
That is true. You know, it really is. And I think probably this is true for any small business and, you know, whether it's in Gaelic or, and there are not that many of us in Gaelic actually, but it's, you know, problems I'd love to have. Well, that's a problem I'd love to have. And then you have it. And then you do have to keep constantly reframing it and go, well, I did say last year that was a problem I would love to have. I said I would love to have, you know, so many orders from our brand new online shop that I would have to pick certain days to go to the post office and not just, you know, go there every time I got another order. And then lo and behold, here we are having this problem I said I'd love to have. It's true. It is true. It is funny because I think like people romanticize publishing a lot, and especially the way it's depicted in like movies and TV, and it really isn't anything like that. So like I do have to kind of occasionally pinch myself and go, yeah, I am really lucky to be able to like set my own schedule on this. Not so lucky to be constantly applying for grants. And of course, the pandemic has made almost every job harder for almost every person. So, you know, and likewise in publishing, it has also too. So that's, you know, we're all kind of struggling with an extra burden right now, in one way or another from that. But no, it is great. And yeah, we have, and oh, yeah, before I talked to you, I was going to look up how many books we have. And I forgot, but they're on our website. And we've got rows and rows, got 2 pages of them now, so I know it's better. We publish in multiple genres. So we started off with nonfiction, with the tattoo handbook, as I said. So mine is called the Scottish Gaelic Tattoo Handbook. But then I immediately thought, I really want to turn this into a series. So it is a tattoo handbook series. So we have an Irish Gaelic tattoo handbook. And then we have the Welsh tattoo handbook, published last September. And then next year, we hope to have a Latin tattoo handbook. So yes, Latin is not a Celtic language, but it's used by a lot of Irish, Scottish Gaels, you know, or in the Middle Ages and earlier. And probably an Ogham or Oham tattoo handbook. So we have signed a contract with an expert, an Oham Ogham expert to work on that. So we're super excited about that. So that's not a language, it's a writing form that was like an alphabet, which was used to write Old Irish and some other Celtic languages. And so that will be pretty cool. So we're just kind of moving forward with that. So that's nonfiction. And then we've also published Scottish Gaelic poetry. We've published 4, I think, total so far, 4 different collections of Scottish Gaelic poetry. We'll have another one coming out next year, which will be Nova Scotian Gaelic poetry from multiple people as opposed to a single author. We've just started getting into children's books in a big way in the last couple of years. So full color children's picture books in Gaelic. And then with some of them, we have the English translation as well. What else? Graphic novels this year. We've just published like last month, 2 Scottish Gaelic graphic novels. And one of them is the first Gaelic graphic novel. They're not the first Gaelic graphic novels, but there have been several published in Scotland already. But it is the first one published in Canada. And it is also the first one to be written and illustrated by a Gaelic speaker and written in Gaelic fahús, like from the beginning. Like it's originally, the text is written in Gaelic. And then we'll probably do a translated English edition next year. But the other graphic novel we have is similar to the ones in Scotland in that it was written first in English by an English-speaking author, and then it was translated by a translator into Gaelic. But it's still cool. So the original Gaelic one is called Atapavanis, which means Out of the Twilight. And the other one is called Rose Fiais, Wild Rose. And it is like set in 1790 in Ireland and London. So that's they're not necessarily like Gaelic topics, but you know, the books themselves are in Gaelic, and it's pretty cool to pair the words with the images for that. And then we've got also our first middle grade novel in English, which is called, but it has a lot of Gaelic cultural content, and it's called Ian of New Scotland.
So Ian of New Scotland is a, as you said, is a new book, and it's young adult.
It's hard to say. It's sort of like some people, depending on who reads it, like some people say, oh, middle grade novels, they're grades 4 to 6, 4 to 7. And then some other people said, no, we think maybe grades 5 or 6 and up. And then some people said, oh, YA. And so I just say, I put it out there, go, you know what? Classic children's literature appeals to a wide range of people, including a lot of us adults.
It's absolutely accessible to kids, maybe, you know, at the very least, 5th, 6th graders. I think probably 4th graders, as you said earlier, would be fine. And not just the reading accessibility, but the content. It is definitely child friendly. It's family friendly. It's not, an adult can absolutely enjoy it like I did. You are not the author, but you had a huge role in its existence. So describe some of the hats that you wore for this production. I know it's not a stage show, but it's still a production.
Yeah. It is a production. Publishing a book is a production. It takes a village. It really, really does. A Gaelic village in this case. But and first off, I should just say that, of course, the reason why I bring this up to you and here where we're talking is because it also has a big old Outlander connection, which is that Diana herself has written a foreword for the book, a brief foreword, which we are so grateful for. And actually, I'll do a little bird walk here and tell you how that happened. That's kind of a funny story, too. So she came to Nova Scotia to do some research for her writing for the Outlander series, but also then ended up giving a really wonderful book signing and talk here in Halifax, Nova Scotia, to a sold out crowd at the Rebecca Cohn Theater. I think it was like 1,000 people. And I knew the bookstore manager who was organizing it. And I said, hey, how about if our Gaelic Milling group comes and does a little opening act? So we did Milling. It's called Milling in Nova Scotia, and it's called Walking in Scotland. And that's that, the, and you've seen, it's in, of course, the first Outlander book, and you see an illustration of it in one episode in the Stars production where, you know, the cloth has been soaked and then it has to be pounded and shrunk. So the women get together and they do this, and they used to use urine. We just use a pitcher of water now. I promise it doesn't smell. But we still have to pour water on it. Even when we're not actually trying to properly shrink a piece of cloth, we still have to pour water on it to stop the fluff from flying off of it too much and going up your nose. And of course, all of this is on hold during the pandemic, but because singing in each other's faces is probably the worst possible thing to do if somebody's sick. So we had this wonderful milling demonstration that we were able to give out on the stage before Diana came on and gave her talk. And prior to that, wearing my publishing hat, I had been invited to a dinner with her with some other local authors and booksellers and publishers. And we had a wonderful time talking. And it was actually at that dinner where the manager of one of our local independent children's bookstores leaned over and said, do you know if there's if Anne of Green Gables has been translated into Gaelic? And I said, no, actually it hasn't been. I said, but you've just planted a seed. So yeah, let me let that percolate. So that we actually did go on and do that, and we did the Kickstarter for it. And anyway, that's a whole nother thing. We can come back to that if you want. And so we do have a Gaelic Anne of Green Gables on our website. And actually, talk about, okay, so this is where you get into the pinch me, this is great, my life is awesome. You know, like these are my bucket list moments. At the end of this month, we're actually going to Green Gables to present a copy of it to them.
Oh my goodness.
Green Gables is actually a national park in Canada. It's owned by Parks Canada. It's called the Green Gables Heritage Place. So we're going to go present a copy of Eleanor Ruig, the Gaelic Anne of Green Gables to them. So I just try to focus on those really good moments. And so let me say, so where were we? Right. We were at dinner with Diana Gabaldon. and just chatting about all kinds of things. And I actually showed her, I was kind of wishing this was video just for the sake of being able to show you this book that I was able to show to her, which was from my husband's aunt's house. We don't even know how it got there. It just turned up in her house in Pictou County, which is where I believe she went to research. But it was a Gaelic translation of Pilgrim's Progress, of all the things to find in your aunt's house. So we're all, like, Gaelic books were heavily on the mind here. And so that was where I met her. And then we kept in touch a little bit. And she had done, a Facebook post or tweet about when we did our Gaelic Anne of Green Gables. And we continued to keep in touch. And when we had this book, Ian of New Scotland. So Ian is a 13-year-old boy, and he arrives in Nova Scotia with his family on the ship Hector, which the second you say that to any Nova Scotian, they go, oh, the ship Hector. Of course, probably most of the folks listening may not have heard of the ship Hector. It would be kind of like if you had said somebody had come over on the Mayflower, kind of like our Mayflower. So 1773, the ship Hector landed in Pictou in Nova Scotia. And the first group of, you could call Gaelic settlers, Highlanders. You would say Highlanders, I would say Gaels. They were Gaelic speakers from the Highlands of Scotland, and they arrived in a group, and they had just had a wretched voyage. And so the book traces this fictitious character, Ian, and his family. But at a lot of there was a passenger list that was written up from memory later in life by one of the people who had come across. And so a lot of the real people who came across are somewhat known. And so the author is a descendant of a couple of, so she went and incorporated some of her ancestors into the book, actually. But so the book traces Ian and his family as they survive, basically, as they try to survive the winter. Because when they landed, they had no food, no money, hardly any stuff, just what they could carry. And then the land agent, who was supposed to be providing them with these plots of land, cheated them. They did a kind of a bait and switch and said, you know, they got them all over with the promise of waterfront land so that you can have access to the water for, you know, hunting and fishing and transportation, your boat and everything. So there were no roads. And so, but they, when they arrived, he said, oh no, well, we don't have those. Those have already been given away to somebody else. You can have this crappy land over here. And they're all like, no, we don't want that land. We want the land you promised us. And they had also been promised supplies to last the winter, like, you know, a barrel of oatmeal or an axe or what have you. So they basically were like, well, if you want your supplies, you're going to have to sign the contract here and, you know, agree to take the land, the inferior land that we give you. And a bunch of them said, heck no, we're not going to do that. And some of them actually left and walked all the way down to Halifax, and some of them stayed for the winter. So Ian and his family are in the group that stays. It reminded, when I first got the manuscript from the author, it has this kind of Little House on the Prairie vibe, survivalist. And also there's a book here that's really popular still. They assign it in the schools. It's called, Hatchet. There's a book called Hatchet. So there's a little bit of a Hatchet vibe, like a survival boy surviving in the wilderness kind of thing. That's the gist of the story. But one of the aspects that always gets left out with the Hector settlers and pioneers is the fact that they were almost all Gaels. They were Gaelic speakers. Like, they were culturally, they were Gaelic. They weren't English speakers. Right? They had a bit of English, but that wasn't their native language. That wasn't their native culture. And so they had, you know, a whole store of tales and stories and oral traditions and, you know, songs and so forth. And that gets erased a lot in history. That's the problem. I think that's one of the best things that Diana did as an author, was to put Gaelic in, like, I think it's on her website, that, you know, well, the logic that, well, of course, if they were Highlanders and they spoke Gaelic, of course you should have them speaking Gaelic in the book. Like, it's such a basic thing to do. And yet, hardly anybody really was doing it properly. And so the fact that she decided to do that was, it really opened up a door for us to start to put that fact back into people's understanding of history, because it had been deliberately erased from history. And actually also in video games, like music for a few video games is bringing it in as well. And it does, it takes a clean slate approach, a clean slate logical approach to say, well, of course, if this was what they spoke, then we should reflect that in the book. And it comes from not having been, I think, not having been schooled in Scotland, not having gone to school in Scotland, not having gone to school in England, not making the assumptions or having the assumptions educated into a young age about like what language anybody spoke where and when, you know, but just going, okay, well, let's go find it out. Let's go to the library, go do the research. And, you know, it does get mentioned. It always gets mentioned like in passing. But, you know, frequently, like if you look it up in the index of a book, it won't even be in the index. It was such a minor thing. Oh, yeah, this book, yeah, like whatever. Okay, well, we'll just write the whole rest of the book like they spoke English. And so, you know, to actually not do that and to have it try to reflect reality more is really astonishing. And so I found that really inspiring. And I said, well, we need to do that with more English books and more stories that we tell, more tales. And so the author of Ian of New Scotland, she's very, very into genealogy, which is a very Gaelic preoccupation, very Gaelic thing to be concerned with. And she is one of the Bewley Mackays. I would say Bewley Mackays. She's one of the Bewley Mackays who are descended from these two brothers from Bewley in the Mackay family who were, of course, Gaelic speakers. And they came over. And then, so their descendants are just kind of all over Nova Scotia now. But I think it was her grandfather was the last Gaelic speaker in her family. So she didn't have a lot of Gaelic in the manuscript when she submitted to me. And I said, Margaret, how would you feel about, you know, working more of that in? And she said, oh, that would be really good. She said, I did have some of that in. She said, but some of my friends here, they read it and they told me I should take it out. See, this is the old attitude. Well, you don't want to confuse people with Gaelic, or like you don't want to drive them away with Gaelic. Well, nobody's confused or driven away by it nowadays, but it definitely, that was how, what people were told, you know, 100 years ago, 50 years ago, 75 years ago, that it was not a positive thing at all. And there wasn't even any thought of like bilingualism being a good thing, you know, like nowadays there's, I think if you get a parenting magazine, at least once a year, a parenting magazine has to run an article about, you know, the benefits of bilingualism. And people know that that's in general, like, not a bad thing, right? But it used to be that that was a terrible thing. No, you must only speak one language. You absolutely must only speak one language, and it must be English. And don't let the other language paint your English either. You know, don't let your children, and it's always appealed to for children, like, think of your children, and it to scare parents into not passing on their language. And so that, you know, that was one of the tactics through which Gaelic was stamped out here in, well, at least in mainland Nova Scotia. And it kept going in Cape Breton. So that's kind of part of our province's claim to fame in that regard. There were loads of Gaelic speakers around in the 18th century and first half of the 19th century in Pictou. And then Margaret, the author, mentioned to me another time, she said, oh, our grandfather would always call us Cullens. And I just got this chill went up my spine when she said that, because it was like a voice talking to us out of the past. Because Cullen means puppy or pup, but it's also a term of endearment towards children. And it's actually a part of a really famous Gaelic song that I was just starting to learn at that point for a song competition. And it's actually written by Ian McCrae in North Carolina, I think in 1775. And it was this kind of song talking about this new land that they've come to and how weird, how strange it is, and, you know, some of the good things in it and the bad things. And he says, sleep soundly, my love, my, you know, my pup. And I had that uppermost in my mind when she said, oh, yeah, my grandfather called us Hulin. So I said, well, you've got to put that in the book, you know. so she worked that in. And I was the editor. And so I worked with the author on different, you know, we went through multiple drafts of the manuscript and kind of found ways to work her Gaelic heritage back in and the Gaelic language back in. And there were some parts where she had already had it there, and we just had to just do normal book editing. And so when she first submitted the manuscript, it had a long kind of part at the beginning where the family was making their way to Loch Broom, which is next to Ullapool in the on the northwest coast of Scotland, to board the ship Hector to sail. And then we found out there was a book that was like kind of like about that, and we thought, well, we better not, better like lessen the focus on that, kind of downplay that. And so what she took you know, some parts of the first part of this manuscript and worked them back in as flashbacks, which just worked so well. She's a really good writer, and she's got these great nature descriptions too and great food descriptions. It kind of reminds me of Farmer Boy, that book in the Little House on the Prairie series. It's about the one about Almanzo Wilder, where he's just basically eating his way through the whole book. And so it was like really interesting to read how different foods were prepared, and then, you know, read about them eating them and what they tasted like. It was cool. So yeah, so we did that. And then, so a book has a cover. And so I'm the publisher. My company is the publisher of this book. And some people sometimes are asking about like, what's the difference between the publisher and the printer? And it's literally just that we hire a printing company, or we contract with a printing company to print the book, but then it has our name on it as the publishing house that, you know, got it already print. So part of that is picking out a cover. So I was able to apply to a group here in Nova Scotia called the Scots for a grant. They had some community grants. So I applied to them for a grant to help cover the cost of hiring a freelance artist to do this cover. And actually, the Scots, this is what Halifax is like here. We're like, okay, so you know how there was the American Revolution, right? And yeah, everybody here is the ones that didn't do that. They stayed loyal. They stayed loyal to the British Crown. And like, when I became a Canadian citizen, you actually have to swear an oath of loyalty to Queen Elizabeth. And it's kind of like, oh, yeah. I'm not kidding about this. Yeah. So, and there's, I'm just reading a book right now about the history of Dartmouth, which is the part of, it's still part of the Halifax municipality, but it's like a little part across the harbor from the main city of Halifax. And a lot of Dartmouth was founded, by United Empire Loyalists, among other groups. Those are the people who fled the U.S. when it became the U.S. because they were still loyal to the Crown. And so the group was awesome that we got the grant from, but the group's name now is the Scots. But the former name of the group was actually, the former name of the society was the North British Society. And this is what Scots called themselves after Culloden, when they did not want to be thought of as disloyal. And they did not want to be seen as Jacobites. They wanted to underline their loyalty to the empire. Basically, you know, they wanted to say, oh, yeah, we're loyal to that. We're not trying to be separatist Scots. You know, we're not trying to be like those terrible Jacobites. So we'll just call ourselves North Britons instead of Scots. So the North British Society, so the North British Charitable Fund is the fund of that belongs to the group now known as Scots, but that they're the ones who actually funded, you know, gave us the grant to hire the artist for the cover. And then of course the cover, which you've seen, we got to work with a great, he's a graphic design instructor here in Halifax, and he actually does his own comic books. And I said, I wanted the cover to look like a graphic novel. Because I think that kids are really, well, I have a daughter who's 16, and I know for the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, she's been very interested in different graphic novels. And I could see that this was very interesting to kids. And we wanted, you know, we wanted kids to look at the book and think, that was cool. You know, I want to pick it up and read it. So the cover features Ian in his kilt, which is not, of course, and you'll know this from Outlander, that it's not, at that time, it wasn't like cut and sewn. It was folded, right? You'd fold it and lay down and wrap it around yourself and get into it that way. And so in the book, there's a flashback scene where his grandfather gives him his old, it would be his plaid, right? The piece of cloth itself. And then he folded that into a kilt and it's a little bit too big for him, but he's loving it and using it as a cloak, as a blanket as well. So yeah, we really wanted to depict him that way. One of the things that we wanted to put on the cover that we didn't was, I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to say, there's a hat made out of fox fur. And you know the old raccoon, the coonskin caps, like Davy Crockett type thing. Yeah, there's one like that made out of fox fur in the book. And I really, you know, we thought about maybe putting that on his head, but we decided best just to have him, you know, with his red hair kind of sticking out all over. So that's how he is. I think the other most interesting part is that we decided the author had worked in several Mi'kmaq characters from the First Nation that is, you know, the First People of Nova Scotia, who are still here, and who also have their own language, the Mi'kmaq language. And it, you know, I thought, and she had looked up some words and kind of worked those in as the Mi'kmaq words and alongside the Gaelic words. And we just thought, well, this would be really interesting. There's a chapter where he meets a Mi'kmaq boy who's about his age. And we thought it would be really nice for the boy to be saying things, you know, because the stereotype of Indians in the movies was, oh, how, and make some hand signals. And that's not this. We want to do this right. We need to do this properly for everybody so that everybody can recognize themselves in this book or their ancestors and feel good about it and know that it's correct. So I was able to reach out through some contacts and we found, ended up finding two different ladies from Eskasoni, which is one of the reserves in Cape Breton. And they're both fluent in Mi'kmaq and both Mi'kmaq educators. One woman is still a teacher and the other one just recently retired from being a translator. And so they did translate a couple of sentences for us so the author wrote sentences and then they translated them so the boy, so the Mi'kmaq boy would have dialogue as well. And then he had a name that the author had picked, but we weren't sure if the name was appropriate. And so they actually, one of the ladies renamed this character for us and then reviewed all the Mi'kmaq cultural content in the book to make sure that it was accurate and that it portrayed things realistically. And so they did that for us. And we had to correct some things about the canoes and the birch bark canoes and a few things. And so that was just working on those things is really the fun part for me of working on a book and, you know, being a publisher and being a small publisher where we have all the tasks, you know, most of the tasks or hats that are on my head. And those are some really, really wonderful things. Probably the worst thing of being a publisher is when you've just finished the manuscript and you've done the last proofreading and you've sent it off to the printer and you're just sitting there going, I know there's a typo in there somewhere.
Does Braden Press plan on having more simplistic, quote unquote, if you want to put it that way, Scottish Gaelic romances?
Oh, that's a question. Oh, you know, not at the moment, but I think kind of related. Definitely, there's related things like Anne of Green Gables, I think, functions in a very similar way. Yeah, now, because now it's actually a really long book. So it was, and translation generally pays by the word. So it was a large project. It has 103,000 words, as I recall, in English and us. And Gaelic texts are usually end up being about 1.3 times longer than the English original if they're translated. Yeah, so Anne is definitely like that. Anne Roach is the name of our translation, and which means red-haired Anne, because I think like we could have called it Anne of Green Gables, but it seems when you look at the different foreign language translation spans too, like they've kind of, the titles are very they can differ, you know, according to the like the language. And so like in Japanese it's Akage no Anne. I speak Japanese, means red-haired Anne. And actually there's this in Gaelic, nicknames are very common in Gaelic and they could often be from your physical characteristics. So Ruig is red-haired and Daum, like Moni and Daum would be brown. It could be like brown-haired or brown-eyed or both. Fan is, which means white, but it also means like fair-haired, so it's blonde. So those are all like legit, you know, kind of nicknames. So like David, you know, oh, well, there's Davy Fan and there's Davy Ruig, you know, blonde Davy and red haired Davy, because maybe there were like 10 Davies and you had to, how are you going to tell them all apart? So we figured that with this would be a good way to do, rename the Anne book. But just getting back to your point, like, yeah, because the it's a very faithful translation. I mean, the translator, she's a native Gaelic speaker, and she's so good at it. And she worked so hard on that translation, especially like looking up all like the plant and flower species, because Ellen Montgomery does a lot of nature writing, actually. And so there's a lot of these like nature descriptive passages in Anne that you, if you go back and read it, you see them, but like you might not remember them. I didn't remember them being there from, you know, reading it when I was younger, but boy, are they ever there. You know, the wind blowing through the pines and the way the sunlight is shining through them, these kinds of things. And then the seasonal changes, she was really good at describing those things. But if you actually want to just sit with like the English one and the Gaelic one side by side, I'm not saying do this if you've never studied Gaelic, like that don't do that. But do it if you're studying Gaelic, if you're learning it, you know, you've gotten a certain ways along. You know, it's not cheating, right? It's and you know, like, you know what happens in Anne. And so when you get to the point of, if you know, if you've read it before when you were younger, or even if you've seen the different TV adaptations, okay, this is the scene where she accidentally dyes her hair green. And so then you know what's happening, right? You've got that overall framework, and that makes it easier. It gives you a bunch of like hooks to hang things on, and you can remember. And then you learn the words more easily too. And there are certain words that are repeated throughout the book, and you just learn them. You know, the author just liked those words, and you tend to learn those that can cement them for you. Even by the time I finished editing, and my Gaelic reading was like so much faster. It was wild. It was really wild. So we do have that. And we do actually have, I should say, like one of the graphic novels, the Rose Vieille, the Wild Rose, is actually a romance. And the author, the writer, I guess I should say, graphic novel, so not the drawer, not the artist of it, but the author of it, is a romance novelist. She writes paranormal romance. Nicola R. White is her name. And so she's also a lawyer. And that's, we actually met because I had consulted her about a copyright question for my first book. And we just stayed in touch. And then she came back to me. She says, yeah, I'm doing this indie comic book, Wild Rose. I wondered if you're interested in the Scottish Gaelic translation, right? And yeah, we ended up doing that. And hopefully we're going to do an Irish translation next. I just need to find my translator. But she actually decided to give away a copy. So for people who buy the paper, we're not doing digital versions this year, more than I could handle to convert them to ebooks. But for the paperback for Wild Rose Fia, if you buy the paperback in Gaelic, then the author has decided to give a copy of the English, a digital copy of the English one to people. So they can kind of do the same thing. They can read side by side. And it's very, it's a wonderful tale of revenge. So it's based on a folk song. Well, it's a kind of partly a folk, it's an old Irish folk song, which I think became an Appalachian folk song too. But it's also a 90s pop song by Nick Cave and Kylie Minogue. It's called Where the Wild Roses Grow. And so this young woman in Ireland like meets up with this English nobleman, and he has his way with her, and then he actually murders her in the ballad. But the comic book and the graphic novel say, well, what if she survived and then set out to get revenge? And so it's I sort of said it was a love story, but it's more of a revenge story. There's love in it too, yeah. Oh, and then we haven't done YA ourselves yet, but there is a niche for that too, for Gaelic YA, I'd say.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they did. So the Gaelic Books Council in Scotland, we've applied for a lot of publishing grants from them, and they've been wonderful working with us on these, funding these projects. And they do, so they have they're based in Glasgow in Scotland, and they have actually an online shop too. I don't know if you have any UK listeners, but that's always, their shop is a great place to buy Gaelic books from, because then you're supporting the authors and publishers, but you're also supporting the Gaelic Books Council overall. So like, you know, they have programs for authors and all kinds of services and programs. So they, I think they commissioned or funded a series couple of years ago, basically they had like a separate kind of guideline of YA, Gaelic novels, you know, short novels for learners. And I think they did a really good job, you know, with more like contemporary topics too, like social media stalking and, you know, murder mysteries and this type of thing. So yeah, so I think that's a really good point. And I think for us, maybe we'll kind of try to do more graphic novels, although it's a production, you know, it's a lot of work, and it does take a lot of people all working together to do them. But I think they're good. I think they're good for when you're learning the language too, because again, you get the visual. We're hoping that will be something that can really grab people's interest. And especially if they've never heard of it before, or if they haven't really seen it or haven't been exposed to it, you know, and if there's a real pressure to keep the, you know, like I mentioned before, the author had it suggested to her by friends to take that stuff out so that it wouldn't alienate people. And we're, you know, she and I have taken the leap of putting it all in, putting it back in and letting people see it. And like, I think, you know, we need to give readers a lot of credit to, you know, that the point, of course we don't expect anyone to be able to read it, but that's why the translation is right there underneath it, right? So the song verse and what it shows you, okay, you can't read those exact words yourself, but you can read the English right underneath it, and you can see the words in the other language there, and it gives you that fuller understanding, just like Diana Gabaldon did in Outlander. It gives you that fuller understanding that, oh, we are actually dealing with another culture here. We are dealing with another language here. Like, it's that reminder that you need, and it makes the whole, I think it makes the whole reading experience much richer. And, you know, I'm hopeful that that readers will agree with us. But one thing, we are going to try to do some actual pronunciation videos for those for Ian of New Scotland. So there is, because we do have a glossary at the back, but that's the only thing that's missing, you know, from a paper book as opposed to like an audiobook where you can't hear the words pronounced. And I think that's probably the biggest barrier for people who are coming to Gaelic for the first time, I would guess, is the pronunciation.
Well, the amount of stuff that you've shared, you've taken all my questions. No, don't be sorry. You've covered everything. So you've actually already answered this one, but I'll ask it specifically so that maybe you can tell us what's coming up like really, really soon. So what are some of the forthcoming projects that you or Braden Press is involved in, or things that you're allowed to share that are like coming up between like, say, now and the beginning of 2022?
Generally, publishers are sort of spring and fall. So yeah, our next kind of whack of new books will be probably March, April, May, 2022. But we do have right now at the printers a coloring book, an adult coloring book, you know, like a fancy coloring book. And I'm really excited about this. And it's called Falcha, a coloring book of Scottish Gaelic phrases and proverbs. And so, and the author, Gail Weatherson, her name, and she is a very good Gaelic learner and also an extremely talented artist. She had come to me about this idea of coloring books a couple of years ago, but she was known at the time for doing these really elaborate drawings with Gaelic phrases, except the Gaelic phrases were all like off color. So, you know, except they're really funny. And I think there's some English coloring books like that now. So, you know, that like you the F word or whatever, and just, you know, if you're into that humor, which I am, they're pretty funny. But having the contrast, I think, between this kind of off color phrase and like a very beautiful illustration all around it that you can color, and then people could like hang that up on the wall to express the feelings. At any rate, so she had some of these, and I was like, you know what, I really love this, but I just don't think that we could do that right now with Braden Press, because we were just starting to publish children's books too. And I didn't want somebody to accidentally think, oh, a coloring book, and then order that, you know, alongside the gift book. And that just wouldn't be a good thing. And also, I do have to mention that our graphic novels are age 15 plus. So I looked on there's an online platform for digital comics called Comixology. And I think Marvel and DC both sell the digital versions of their comic books there too. And people can subscribe to that. I get no consideration for saying this. But they do have a rating system, so I went and looked up the rating system, and I think our books, you know, they have some spiciness, a little bit of spice, a little bit of you know, non-explicit nudity, I guess you could say, and like some sex that is not graphic at all. And so that, I think, earns them like a 15 plus, age 15 and up rating. So yeah, they're not, but, and I think people who know about graphic novels would understand that. It's just the folks who aren't very familiar with graphic novels who think it's the same thing as a comic book and that comics are for kids, that, you know, that's where I have to be careful to mention it and say, no, no, this is not a kid's book. This is a book for grown-ups, you know, a book for mature readers, shall we say, or it has mature themes. Yeah, so we had to unfortunately not pursue the mature phrases coloring book. However, then just this last year, like, Scottish Gaelic is available on Duolingo now, and I believe it's free on Duolingo. And so, and I'm in the Scottish Gaelic Duolingo Facebook group. I just like to keep an eye on what people are interested in, because I could sometimes get ideas for a new blog post. And somebody was asking last year about coloring, you know, wanting a coloring book. And I said, oh, actually, we need to revisit that idea. So I got in touch with the author, and she was up for it. So she's drawn these beautiful, intricate drawings. And so you can, you know, they're very, I think it's probably pretty meditative to sit there with, you know, fill in all the tiny little things and make different patterns with the colors. And oh, they're gorgeous. So at any rate, that is, it's actually available now on basically online, wherever books are sold online. And then here in Canada, we're in the process of printing, we're just calling it a deluxe edition. So being a Canadian company, it's actually really ridiculously expensive for us to ship books to the States physically sometimes. Like a large box of books is just crazy. So we don't do that. We use two different print-on-demand companies. So basically people order the book online from, you know, wherever online books are sold. And then it gets actually printed within the U.S. and then shipped to them. So, but here in Canada, so, and those print-on-demand ones, right, are usually printed on 50-pound paper, which is just a kind of average, like, paper weight for book pages. The deluxe edition we're doing in Canada is going to be on 70-pound paper. So pay more for printing that, and we're just charging a buck or two more for the price. And so then if people want to really, you know, if they know this is something they're super into and they really love coloring, they really like to like cut the things out of coloring books and hang them on the wall. You can actually frame them because the pages we've made 8x10. So, you know, you can carefully cut out the page after you've colored it, stick it in a frame, and enjoy it that way. So yeah, so we're pretty excited about that. It's kind of similar to my Scottish Gaelic tattoo handbook in a way, because it's like, it focuses, there's a little bit about design, but it's really focused on the language, on like word art, I guess you could say. Yeah, word art. And so that's, you know, I'm hopeful that people will find, that some folks will find that like a fun way into the language, you know, a way to engage with the language that's in addition to, you know, maybe doing it on Duolingo or taking a class online, or just, you know, if you even enjoy engaging with it, you know, as you read it in an English book, like with the Outlander bookstore with Ian New Scotland, you know. So I'm all about trying to find, you know, some new and fun ways for people to get people into a relationship with the language, you know, to kind of engage with it and just to know what it is really, and not to because, you know, like I'm mentioned earlier, that it just went for so long being erased and you know, people trying to make it disappear, and people who could speak it were made to feel ashamed of that. And so, you know, we're really just doing whatever we can to turn that around.
Before I let you go, if someone has a question about maybe where can I find this, or what is this one like, or whatever, a question about books, or a question, maybe an idea of something for the future, what is the best way for someone to contact you?
Good question. Okay, yeah. So you can visit the Braden Press website, which is, now Braden, I should have mentioned this earlier, Braden is kind of the English way to say it, but it's the company is named after a salmon. So Bratan is the Gaelic word for salmon, and it's named after the salmon of knowledge in Irish and Scottish Gaelic mythology, in the tales of Finn McCool. So when he accidentally tastes a little bit of the salmon, and then, you know, then he's got all the knowledge of the world. We actually have a kid's book about that too. So our website is Braden Press. So it's Braden spelled the Gaelic way. So it's BRADANPRESS.com. So, and again, it's BradenPress.com. And yeah, so BradenPress.com. We've got all our books there. Next year, we will have a Tartans of Eastern Canada will be another book that we'll have. And we'll have, hoping to have another couple Scottish Gaelic tattoo handbook titles. We'll have a poetry collection. Various other things underway. Like I said, English, hopefully English edition or English translated edition of one of our graphic novels, and probably another volume, like a volume two, from that graphic novel that's originally in Gaelic. Now, whether it's going to be called Out of the Twilight Volume 2 or probably a totally different title, but we actually already have the stories from the author, so probably over Christmas I'll be just sitting there, you know, watching movies, watching Christmas movies and like letter and graphic novels.
I can tell you love what you do, and it's also exciting to see what's coming up and to see how the company and the products that you offer grow in number as well as in type, and thus you would be reaching even a larger audience.
Oh yeah, and we'd definitely love to hear from everybody. Like if you have, you know, an idea for something you'd like to see, drop us a line, or, you know, by any chance, if there are any Gaelic authors out there that have been listening to this, you know, drop us a line too. And yeah, or if you're looking for a certain book and having trouble finding it, email us anything and everything.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Emily McEwen. It was so great to speak with you. And thank you so much for sharing about yourself and your company and hanging out with us here for a little bit.
Thank you, Kathleen. Thank you yourself. Yeah, it's been great. And maybe we can do it again sometime. It's been great to talk.
That would be great. Okay. Thank you so much. And we look forward to speaking with you in the future.
More than 10. Many thanks.
Again, a special thanks to co-producer Elizabeth S. To find out more about how you can support us on Patreon, visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/OutlanderPod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at OutlanderPod.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.